I'm your host, Lee W. Johnson, and welcome to my podcast, where I talk about all things related to magic, witchcraft, demonolatry, and a whole load of other related things. If you would like to find out more about me, get in touch with me, or hire me for a service, please go to my website, leewjohnson.com, or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. Over the years, I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, they went to their teachers and elders and they were told that they cannot be a proper witch unless they renounce Christianity. Now, there is some bullshit in this, although there is something to say about releasing yourself from other people's worldviews. So I just want to address that today. Now, the problem we face when we move from a Christian faith onto a pagan path is that there is a lot of programming that has taken place, especially from an early age, and we get tied into this worldview. And in order to move onto a pagan path, we need to release ourselves from that worldview itself. That worldview may consist of things like you have to give all your hopes and dreams to a disembodied old man in the clouds, or we have to distinguish between right and wrong or good and evil. In fact, we don't even get to distinguish. We are told what is right and wrong and what is good and evil, and we have to follow it. So all these aspects within this Christian worldview that we need to release ourselves from in order to move onto a pagan path. And as we continue, we find that these things become more subjective and more personal, and someone else's worldview is no longer ours. So this really all becomes or boils down to creating your own worldview and your own path at the end of the day. But in order to do that, we need to step off someone else's path. The problem is, I found over the years, there's a lot of pagan teachers who kind of just sit there and say, my way or the highway. You know, you have to follow their path, or, you know, you cannot be a proper witch. Now, I will get into trying on different worldviews just now. But if anybody tells you their way or the highway, that is a Christian worldview. You know, if you are not a Christian, then you are going to hell and you follow the devil and all of this stuff, which is purely Christian mythology. But it really is, you have to do it our way because our way is the only right way. That's a load of bullshit. That's rubbish. So if a pagan teacher comes along and tells you that, then they are probably still tied into their own Christian worldview themselves. They are still tethered to that Christian life that they had, and they have taken that aspect and that teaching of you have to do it my way, or there is no, because there is no other way, and they brought it into this so-called pagan practice. Now, when it does come to mixing Christianity and witchcraft, there are some difficulties and problems with this, obviously. It's going to be a bit of a hit and miss situation because Christianity is monotheistic. Witchcraft is mostly polytheistic, can be pantheistic, animistic, etc., etc. But it's definitely not monotheistic. And trying to fit those two together is like trying to put a round peg in a square hole. It just will not work. However, what you can do, and this is what other people have done, you can take the entities from the Christian or the Catholic faith. So whether it's Jesus, Mary, the Holy Guardian Angel, the saints, the angels, the archangels, etc., can take those entities and you can work with them in a framework of witchcraft. But once you do that, you are no longer following a monotheistic path. therefore you are no longer following a Christian path. A lot of people are referring to themselves as being Christian witches. And this is where things kind of break down a little bit, and misunderstandings come in. There are a lot of traditions and faiths and paths which are around worldwide nowadays, which do have a lot of Christian integration in them, but it doesn't make them Christian. One of the prime examples here would be hoodoo. When the slaves were being brought over to America, they were forced to integrate Christianity and Catholicism into their practice. They were forced to actually follow that faith. So what they did, they took the saints and they integrated those into the practice. The saints represented the different lower and the spirits, and the Bible became very much part of the practice. But that was all in order to hide their own practice so that they could actually survive. Because, if you didn't follow the Christian or Catholic faith of the slave master, you were killed. So in order to survive, they had to integrate those things into their own practice. But nowadays, people obviously don't have those same threats of being killed by a slave master. But those aspects have become so integrated that they are part of the practice. And even if you go into traditional witchcraft, you'll find a lot of mention of Christianity. A lot of the prayers and the spoken spells and things like that, which you may come across from older books, have a Christian aspect and a Christian element. They will call on God and such things, because over the years that integration happened. Anybody who follows or says that they are Famtrad, who comes from a lineage of witches in their family that dates back a couple centuries, will have Christian elements in their own practice. Any family tradition of the craft that comes from, say, England, for example, is going to have a lot of Christian elements in the practice. And you'll also find that people who do follow those old ways, and the old folk who do practice those old ways, will probably not refer to them as themselves as witches. They'll probably use titles like cunning folk or cunning man, cunning woman, or green gown, or something similar. You don't even have to call yourself a witch. It's just, witch has become very much a blanket term, an umbrella term. 15, 20 years ago, it was pagan. Pagan was the blanket term for all of these practices. Now all of a sudden it's become witch, and even to the extent of Wicca. People are calling themselves Wiccans left, right and centre when they're not actually practicing Wicca. You don't have to call yourself a witch at the end of the day. It's all about creating your own worldview. So what do you need to do? What you need to do is release yourself from the tethers of that previous faith. This can be a very difficult task. It can actually go on for years and years, especially if that faith was programmed from an early age. You're going to have that worldview ingrained in you. So it can take a very, very long time for this to actually happen. And you'll find after a couple of decades, you'll still fall back onto those worldviews. But it usually becomes a bit easier to catch at that stage. But what you want to try and do is release yourself from those bonds, from those tethers. And as you do, you start to find yourself becoming freer. And, you start to loosen up those ties. And what you can then do is try on a different worldview. And, try and find one that fits you nicely. It's not too baggy, it's not too tight. A nice fit so that you can actually feel comfortable while you're exploring this worldview. And then create a love affair with it. Get to know its dislikes and its likes, get to know its depths, get to know its difficulties, its happinesses, its joys, everything. Try and get to know everything about that worldview. Then when you get to a point where you feel you know it well enough at that stage, you can explore it more, you can carry on with it, or you can come along and try on a different worldview. Get to know that worldview. Now, coming from a Christian background, you may find this a little bit difficult because we are told we are only allowed to do things a particular way. We are only allowed to follow one particular God, and that programming is going to kick in. But once you try on a different worldview, you can try on another one. It doesn't mean you completely reject this worldview that you've just tried on. You can keep it around. But now you're trying on a different worldview. Creating a relationship with something else, and you can then explore that one, get to know it, create a relationship with it, again create a love affair with it, and then once you get to know that, you'll probably find it helps with the creation of your own path, your own worldview that you're trying to develop, and you can take things which integrate and mix well with this other worldview. Now, bear in mind, this is not eclecticism. We're not just willy-nilly taking things left, right, and center, here and there and everywhere, and smashing them all together and hoping they will work. We are finding things within one worldview which resonates with something in another worldview, and we are bringing them together in order to create a balance, a harmony. And in order to do that, you have to understand each worldview properly, because if you don't, you won't know which parts to put together. But putting those parts together can help you to grow more. It can help you to understand teachings and aspects within each worldview, because one may explain it better for you than another one, whereas another aspect in this one may help to explain something within this worldview, and you start to understand, you start to gain knowledge. So it's all about trying on these different worldviews, but not just trying them on like an outfit and then taking it off the next day and throwing it away. It's about creating a love affair with it, about creating a bond, creating a relationship, and understanding it completely so that you can then bring things together and start to develop your own path and your own worldview. But in order to do that, you do need to step off someone else's worldview. And this is the problem with faiths like Christianity. You get told what to do. You get told how to worship. You get told what to believe in. And you are then traveling on someone else's worldview. And you'll find that this path that you start to create becomes a crooked path. And then you start to understand witchcraft. So this is going to be, it's not going to be a path that is paved straight from A to Z. It's going to be a path that has twists and turns and bends and curves and everything else along the way. And all of those twists and turns, you're going to find all these nuggets, little nuggets of hope and happiness within them. And you're going to come across some nasty little beasties that you're going to run away from. But that's part of the learning process. So in a sense, rejecting your Christian faith or your Catholic faith has some grounds to it, but to say to somebody you cannot be a proper witch until you renounce Christianity, that's Christianity. That's a Christian person saying you cannot, you have to renounce Satan in order to be a Christian. You know, that's just somebody who has come from a Christian background and still has the ties and bonds to that Christian worldview. You know, you're not going to renounce Christianity. There are some methods in order to deprogram, which are kind of renouncing in a way, but that's done in order to step off someone else's path, someone else's worldview. In order to free yourself from it so that you can then explore your own way, your own path. and start to build your own worldview. But those are just practices in order to deprogram you from, to, in order to get you to loosen those bonds and to shake them up a little bit. So sometimes we need a good shaking up in order to actually move forward instead of just sitting there and letting somebody else tell us what to do and how to practice. Now, this actually brings up the question, is there such thing as a proper witch? And I would have to say no. If we actually have a look at the definition of proper, it says denoting something that is truly what it is said or regarded to be. Now, can a witch be a proper witch? A witch is so diverse, and no two witches are the same. We may have, things that which overlap, understandings, teachings, particular aspects within our worldviews which do overlap and are common. But no two witches are the same. No two witches have exactly the same worldview. So you cannot tell a witch to follow your way because that's just ridiculous. So can we have a proper witch? No, we can't. It's just not possible. And I don't think anybody can actually ever say they are a proper witch. So anybody who tells you that you can't be a proper witch until you do X, Y, and Z, then tell them to sod off, really. They are just really still tied in with their own Christian worldview. And they have taken that lesson of you have to do it my way because it's the only right way, and they've brought it into their own practice, and that's what they're trying to force people into. So just be wary of this if you do find a teacher or an elder who does say something like this. I will say, there is some people who will do this. I doubt they will ever use the term proper witch. You can't be a proper witch until whatever. But there are some teachers who will incorporate practices, methods, in order to give you that shake up so that you can start loosening the bonds. And those can be quite severe practices. You probably consider them to be severe because of that Christian bondage that you are experiencing. So it may feel like a violation, but a proper teacher will guide you through it, and will help you through the whole process. But they may incorporate certain things which are going to shake you up, and just be discerning, and make sure your teacher is somebody who you can actually trust, and then you should be okay. And if you do have doubts, ask why they're doing this, or ask somebody else who you do trust and ask them their opinion. Okay. It's Wednesday, and welcome back to the Ask Lee section or segment. All right, so if you do have any questions, remember to leave them in the comments below, and I will add them to the list for this Ask Lee segment. And today's questions are from Fat Ass Squirrel, all revolving around servitors and thought forms, and also from Jason Davis. Also had a question about servitors, and one from Sarah V, which is relating to the Dark Night of the Soul. So let's have a look at that. Okay, so question, I'll do the first question and then we'll go on to the second question. Let's see, is it possible to obscure or completely hide servitors' thought forms? Say, hypothetically, you had a thought form attached to you, performing tasks around you daily. How would one go about hiding these thought forms from those who may be able to take notice? Okay. So yes, it is possible. We speak about within magic, we speak about invisibility. And invisibility is really about not being noticed. It's not, when we think of the invisible man or something like that, where if you become invisible, if you were to look at your own hand, you wouldn't even see it. It would be completely blank. Well, see-through, let's put it that way. So you don't become see-through, you don't become translucent. It's more a case of just not being noticed. This means that if you were to walk into a room with people in it, they wouldn't take any notice of you until you actually drop the shroud. So it's very similar with the servitors, you can do exactly the same thing. And all it really takes is there's a few different methods, but the one that probably works the easiest and best is to just imagine a shield around you. And the shield is refracting light. So if you think of how we view things, how we see solid objects, it's light that's coming in, it's hitting the solid object, and then it's bouncing off and it's entering our eye. And that gets interpreted by the brain and becomes a 3D object with shades and colors and such things. But if the light were to come along and not bounce off, but be absorbed, then you wouldn't see it because there's nothing actually bouncing off this object, entering your eye, which your brain can then interpret. So when you create your servitors, your thought forms, what you can do is add, because a thought form is really a body of energy, okay? So what you can do is add a shield around it, or a layer or a skin around the servitor itself, and that skin would then absorb light instead of reflecting it. So if anybody does have the sight who can see bodies of energy, spirits and such things, then it will basically, they won't notice it, let's put it that way, because it will be absorbing light instead of reflecting it. You can obviously also program the servitor just to become unnoticeable. So when it is doing its work, it's doing it in such a way which isn't bringing attention to itself. So it's all about the programming really, and how you build the servitor. But yes, it can be done. Right, so the second part of the question, also regarding thought forms, what are your various ways of feeding thought forms that you personally have found to be effective, at least in your experience? My favorite ways of feeding the servitors is either with blood, my own blood obviously, or with the elemental energies. Now, this goes back to how the servitor was created. So if I created the servitor and I gave it a gestation period and I was using sexual fluids for that creation of the servitor itself, I would probably then continue to feed it blood after it's been created in order to keep it alive. If, however, it is more in line with being an artificial elemental, then what you're doing then is working with the elemental energies. So you would be pulling in the element or elements, depending on the task and the purpose and what the elemental servitor or thought form has been created for. You would then use a particular element or particular elements in order to create it in its creation process. So you would draw in that energy and then you would project it into the servitor itself. And then later, when it's about doing its work and you need to call it back to have a feeding, then you would just do exactly the same thing. You would draw in the elements it was created from and you would project it into the servitor. I think in terms of what you feed the servitor, it relates a lot to how it's created, and the methods you use to create it. But for For me, blood and elemental energies are usually the two that I go with to feed a servitor. I think we can actually do another question today. All right, so I'm going to add, let's have a look who was the next one. Okay, so the next question was from Sarah V. This was a great topic to cover. I can't remember which video that was on, so apologies for that. I have another question for you, Lee. Can one experience Dark Night of the Soul multiple times? Yes, absolutely. So, Dark Night of the Soul often presents as depression, but it is slightly different. When you are performing magical tasks, when you are, especially when you are performing some kind of magical working, which is an extended period of time or over an extended period of time, what you may find is that you get to a certain point and you probably accomplish what you were aiming for, but then there's a period where you have to sort of step back, you have to fall back in order to assimilate what has happened, what you've experienced, the knowledge you've gained. So it's all about getting to a point and then stopping, stepping back and assimilating what, all of that energy, all of that knowledge. And during those periods, it can often feel like depression. You do go into a dark period. And this is very much a death and rebirth process, so it's an initiatory process. And when we talk about initiation, initiation is a beginning. So what happens is you kind of make progress in your path, and you get to a point where you've got to go through the next door. But before you can go through the next door, you've just got to step back and just see what happened during this whole period. And as I said, it can present very much like depression. It does feel very dark. It does feel very depressing. But because it comes from a magical advancement, it would be things that you are doing in order to advance yourself magically. And therefore, it becomes easier to recognize as being Dark Night of the Soul as opposed to normal depression. You should be able to recognize the two. But it is a death and rebirth process. So we, as I said, we kind of progress to a certain point where we get to a door and we have to go through the door in order to reach, go to the next phase. But before we can go through the door, we've just got to assimilate everything that's happened during this phase. Once we've done that, we can then step through the next door. And that stepping through that next door is an initiatory process. You go on to a new beginning. And this happens over and over and over and over again, right through your whole life. So these initiatory processes are not just, you kind of do something and now you're initiated. It's a constant process of advancement, stopping, falling back, assimilating, then moving forward onto the next phase, and then continuing with that. So it does continue, the process just continues over and over and over again. I'm going to do another question. Let's see what the next question was. From Jason Davis. Can servitors have servitors? Never actually thought about this one, so that's quite interesting. I don't think a servitor can have a servitor. Although it depends on the purpose that the servitor was created for and if it is a necessity. But I say a servitor can't have a servitor in the sense that a servitor isn't a sentient being. However, if a servitor is worked by a group of people, and the larger the group and the more extended period of time that this continues, it can become an egregore. And an egregore is a sentient being, so I can't see any reason why an egregore couldn't have servitors. But if we come back to the actual application of the magician themselves, Let's, for example, say you created a servitor to help with the sale of a particular product. So you created it, you brought it to life, you programmed it with a particular task. And then as you continue, you find out that, you should have actually added something particular into the programming of that servitor because now, you didn't think about it before, and it's quite a necessary part or a necessary step to the process of selling this particular product. It may be advertising or creating a following for the products, or it may be pushing people down the sales funnel. Whatever it is, it's just a part of the process. That you didn't think about initially, therefore you didn't program the servitor with it. Now, in some cases, some people will say you can call the servitor back and you can add that programming. I'm more inclined not to do that because I've already given a particular servitor a particular task. So what I would usually do then is create another servitor to back up this initial, the first servitor. So in a sense, that is a servitor having a servitor. So, you can create a whole bunch of servitors and put them together to act as a team. So one will handle one task, another will handle another task, etc., etc., etc. And at the end of the day, what you're doing is they're all working together to complete a particular goal. Just that they are all handling different aspects or different parts of that goal itself. I suppose it depends how you look at it. Can a servitor have a servitor? Yes, no, not really sure how to answer that, but as I said, it's how you actually view the process itself. All right, I'm going to not answer any more today. All right, so I'm going to end today's Ask Lee with those three or four questions. And as I said, if you do have any questions, just leave them in the comments below and I will answer them in this section on a Wednesday. And I'll see you next week. Have a good one for now. Cheers. Bye bye. This podcast was brought to you by, myself, Lee W. Johnson. To find out more about me, please visit my website at leewjohnson.com or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. If you like the video format, then subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I also host a live show every Friday with Rev Kai called the Black Hat Chat. It's just two witches chatting about traditional witchcraft and other topics. That's me for this week. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks for listening.